Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this. Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's W-I-X.com.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
Abuse of power or political theater? Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Gina Cervetti. Glad you're with us. Thursday, July 31st. Here's what's up this hour.
It's sure to be a hot topic on the campaign trail this fall. The House has given Speaker John Boehner the authority to sue President Obama for overstepping his legal authority.
Proof in writing. Critics say emails from IRS official Lois Lerner are evidence of her bias against conservatives. You'll hear the salty language she used.
As the death toll climbs on both sides in the fighting between Israel and Hamas, another 16,000 Israeli reserves have gotten the call up.
And there's one industry that's been unable to keep up with the oil boom in North Dakota: airports.
Minimal number of bathrooms. Space is a problem. In Minot, North Dakota, things are so cramped and get so crowded, and oil workers come off two-week shifts and they're going home for 2 weeks or whatever, and a beer at the snack bar there is $5 for 16 ounces, and once a week they're calling the police to break up fights.
Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney visited newly overwhelmed airports in North Dakota. Hear what he found in about 20 minutes. It's a showdown over executive power. The House has given the green light to Speaker John Boehner to file a lawsuit against President Obama. The complaint? That the president has overstepped his legal authority on issues like health insurance and immigration laws.
Are you willing to let any president choose what laws to execute and what laws to change? Are you willing to let anyone tear apart what our founders have built?
Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Crittenden, meanwhile, says it sets up a possible constitutional test and gives both parties a potent campaign issue to take home for the congressional recess, which will last 5 weeks. Michael, what are we seeing here?
So the focus of, obviously House Republicans have been making a lot of noise for some time about Mr. Obama and the White House executive actions on issues like immigration, the health care law, a variety of things where philosophically the two parties don't see eye to eye. And so what we're seeing now is they are targeting specifically, they've said that the lawsuit will focus on the White House's decision to waive the Affordable Care Act's employer mandate without Congress's consent, which creates sort of an interesting dynamic wherein, Republicans oppose the Affordable Care Act, but are suing the president because he didn't enforce the law's rules in the way they think he should have.
And Republicans say they're doing this to prevent the system of checks and balances that's in place from falling apart.
Yeah, they are framing it in the broader issue of, the separation of powers and the respect between the legislative and the executive. So you're sort of seeing, I think there are definitely folks on the left who say, this is obviously just a political stunt. We've heard a lot of that in the last couple days. And bigger picture, though, is, both parties, this gives both parties sort of a potent political issue to take home as they leave Washington for a week's vacation next week.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Crittenden in Washington. What's the president's reaction been to this?
He basically, he said, this is a political stunt. He said Republicans were wasting time voting on this lawsuit instead of focusing on issues. They're not talking about middle class issues. That's one of the Democrats' big talking points this week, and something they plan to discuss at length over the break is that, while Republicans are wasting taxpayer money filing a lawsuit, they could be focusing on jobs or raising the minimum wage or some, unemployment insurance. So there's a lot of things.
So where does this go next, Michael?
Whether or not the lawsuit will go anywhere is a very open question. Many of the constitutional law people I've spoken to, experts, have said it's very unlikely they get standing, in which case The lawsuit will eventually get dismissed, because one of the things you have to do to get standing is to show harm. A party has to show harm, and it's hard to show you have been harmed by the president not enforcing a law you've tried to repeal 50 plus times. That's the argument I've heard from a lot of constitutional law experts. So, it will be interesting, even if the courts do grant standing, the courts don't necessarily want to get into a knockdown, drag-out fight between the executive and legislative branch. I mean, that's not something the judicial branch necessarily wants to get in the middle of. So, I think there's a lot of question whether or not this lawsuit actually goes anywhere. But, as far as political messaging, Republicans can say, hey, we're trying to keep the president honest. Meanwhile, the Democrats can say, look, this is what Republicans are up to. They can both rally their base around this issue.
Thanks, Michael. Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Crittenden from the Bureau in D.C. By the way, the House lawsuit isn't the only new legal challenge facing the Obama administration. On Tuesday, West Virginia filed suit against the administration, challenging its decision to allow insurance commissioners to choose whether to let insurance companies temporarily continue to sell policies that don't comply with the Affordable Care Act. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey said the president cannot pick and choose which laws to follow and which to ignore on the basis of political convenience. 12 minutes now after the hour. Well, House Republicans have released a series of emails from 2012 showing that former IRS official Lois Lerner used the terms crazies, and I'll abbreviate here for this one, the word A followed by holes, in a discussion about conservatives. She's at the center, as you know, of investigations over IRS treatment of conservative groups seeking tax-exempt status. The IRS Inspector General last year concluded that the agency had targeted Tea Party and other conservative groups for burdensome scrutiny and lengthy delays as they sought tax-exempt status. House Oversight Committee Chairman Daryl Issa of California has proposed reforms that would get the politics out of the IRS.
If Congress created a bipartisan multi-member commission, it would create assurances that the IRS truly is an independent, nonpartisan agency.
House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Dave Camp of Michigan, meanwhile, says these emails, quote, directly demonstrate Ms. Lerner's mistreatment of conservative groups, which was driven by her personal hostility toward conservatives. Ms. Lerner has declined to answer lawmakers' questions about what happened. It is 13 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Being in global sales, I never know where my job will take me. The last thing I need to worry about while traveling is outrageous data charges. That's why I switched to T-Mobile's Simple Choice for Business Plan. I get unlimited text and data in over 100 countries at no extra charge. No multiple SIM cards or international data plans. I just land, turn on my phone, and it works. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only. Subject to change. Capable device required. Standard speeds approximately 128 kilobits per second. See T-Mobile.com for details and included destinations.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome aboard. House Republican leaders are moving forward with their preferred plan on federal highway spending, setting up a vote today that's designed to force the Senate to accept a $10.8 billion measure funding highway projects through May of next year. The House and Senate have been at odds on how to address federal highway trust fund spending on roads and mass transit. The fund is up against a deadline tomorrow when the federal government starts cutting and delaying transportation financing to states. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Siobhan Hughes on the T-Mobile hotline. Siobhan, what's up here?
The never-ending saga is about to come to an end. House Republicans were preparing to bring to the floor on Thursday a bill to strip out some Senate changes that were made on Tuesday, and send that back to the Senate, and then promptly leave town at about 1 p.m. in the afternoon, leaving the Senate with basically no choice but to take the House passed bill. One interesting note. The Senate on Tuesday, in somewhat of a surprise move, succeeded in amending the House bill to make it of shorter duration, to extend only through December 19th, and to include less money, about $8.1 billion. The goal was to put pressure on Congress to come up with a long-term highway spending plan for this year. But according to House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Dave Camp, it turned out there was a drafting error in that Senate bill, and they came up a few billion dollars of short of what they had wanted to do. So even though that would have taken the highway funding bills through December 19th, it would not have provided enough money to go for that long. That would have put lawmakers in the position of doing a long-term bill before the elections. That was seen as untenable, and that's one reason people are thinking House Democrats will go along with John Boehner's plan on Thursday.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Siobhan Hughes. When the Senate passed its version, did it think the House would go along with it, or was it more to make a statement?
You know, it's a little bit of both. A piece of it was to make a statement, but if you talk to people like Senate Finance Committee Chairman Ron Wyden, he noted that when the House passed that original highway spending bill back in the middle of July, 45 Republicans had defected. One of the reasons for that was unhappiness with a budget maneuver known as pension smoothing. We've discussed that before. It basically lets companies contribute less to their corporate pensions, which raises revenue for the government because those contributions are tax deductible. There was a lot of unhappiness among conservatives about that. And had all of the Democrats decided to side with the Senate, they could have carried those 45 Republicans along with them, and that would have been enough to stop John Boehner's plans in its tracks. So there actually was a path forward in the House for the Senate bill.
So it sounds like the House is going to win this fight because time has run out.
Yes, the technical term for that is jamming. The House Speaker is about to jam the Senate. They will leave town. There is going to be no time to do anything other than the House plan. That's exactly right.
Thanks, Siobhan. Wall Street Journal reporter Siobhan Hughes from D.C. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is here. She has America's first news.
Good morning. The GOP-led House has voted to authorize a lawsuit against President Barack Obama on grounds he'd overstepped his legal authority. Meanwhile, just released emails show former IRS official Lois Lerner referring to some conservatives as crazies and more. The emails mark new revelations fueling GOP claims of IRS efforts to target conservative groups. The Peace Corps is removing volunteers from West Africa amid a deadly Ebola outbreak that's killed almost 700 people, including American Patrick Sawyer, who died in Nigeria. His wife, Dekanti Sawyer, is trying to raise awareness of the deadly disease.
We've already lost Patrick, and we're losing tons of people there. And we don't need that killer to come here as well.
Sawyer contracted Ebola from his sister in Liberia, who also died. Two American aid workers were being treated in Liberia. The CDC has stressed there is no significant risk of an Ebola outbreak in the United States. Johnson & Johnson plans to tell doctors worldwide to return a hysterectomy tool that's blamed for spreading cancer within the body. J&J had already suspended sales of the devices after the FDA advised doctors not to use it. Your Hyundai may be part of a recall. The company's action covers 883,000 Sonatas to fix problems with gear shift levers. Hyundai says it's received about 1,200 warranty claims about the problem. No reports of crashes or injuries. Today brings a couple of joblessness indicators. In the meantime, stock futures look negative this morning amid default worries in Argentina. Yesterday, the Dow was down 32. The S&P added less than 1. The NASDAQ was up by 20.
You've got some economic data coming out. You've got some Fed statements coming out. There is a lot to take in, and consequently, we've had a lot of days that we've seen fairly lackluster trading action.
Chuck Carlson at Horizon Investments. Hey, you know when you're driving behind a truck full of stuff, wondering if it's all secured safely in the back? Well, it wasn't apparently on I-95 north of Boston, where state police say an axe bounced from a landscaper's truck, pierced the windshield of a car, and became lodged in the dashboard. No one was hurt.
Holy smokes.
Pretty amazing photograph along with this story, Gordon, I have to say. But haven't you thought about that sometimes when you're driving behind a truck that's got a lot of junk in the back?
Yeah.
Just the other day I saw one in the actual... the gate was down. It wasn't secured.
Is that right?
And sure enough, that truck pulled over, and I think those guys were getting out to close it, but they weren't aware of it.
On a one-lane highway, right, you got to give way more space. If you got multiple lanes, maybe change lanes, right, back off a little bit, just as a defensive measure.
Yeah, I try not to stay behind trucks when I see that.
Jeez. 23 minutes after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Time now for a travel update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Make your travel dollars count. Join Lexington's reward program to earn free hotel stays worldwide and instant perks at most locations. Visit LexingtonHotels.com. The oil boom in North Dakota has been a gigantic economic boost for the state, with people flocking there for high-paying jobs, but it's also created nightmares at local airports. Flights are being run out of portable trailers. Lines at security, boarding, and everything else are huge. Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney paid a visit to some of the airports in North Dakota. Scott, what have you seen?
These airports were never built for this kind of volume, so they're having to improvise, and it's and some of it's kind of crazy stuff. In Williston, North Dakota, they had a terminal that they just built in 2006, and it had 41 seats in the hold room by the gate. That was plenty for when you just had an occasional turboprop come through, but now they've got multiple regional jets lined up at the same time, and so 41 seats isn't going to cut it when you got two or three 50-seat airplanes that are fully loaded waiting. And so they took a portable double-wide trailer that had been used as an elementary school classroom and turned it into a terminal. TSA had them put bars on the window, but otherwise... this is an airport where the food service is vending machines, which they upgraded, minimal number of bathrooms, that's a problem, space is a problem, just the whole thing. And in Minot, North Dakota, things are so cramped and get so crowded, and oil workers come off 2 week shifts and they're going home for 2 weeks or whatever, and a beer at the snack bar there is $5 for 16 ounces, and once a week they're calling the police to break up fights.
Jeez. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney about how the oil boom in North Dakota has created a nightmare for the airports there. So there's a lot of building planned here for some of these airports. Is there a chance there could be overbuilding because perhaps the oil boom could run its course?
Yeah, I think in any oil boom, that's always the risk. It's the same risk that people have building hotels and everything else in town. There's been tremendous building of housing and things like that.
Thanks, Scott. Wall Street Journal airline writer Scott McCartney visiting some of the airports in North Dakota, places like Minot, Williston. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Morning. Is there a voice in your head saying you can do better with your finances? Well, know that you can do better. Save more for retirement and reduce costly broker and mutual fund fees with a free, easy, and secure tool called Personal Capital. In one place, Personal Capital aggregates all of your accounts like your 401k and IRA, shows how much you're overpaying in fees, and how to reduce those fees. You also get tailored advice on optimizing your investments. That's the personal in Personal Capital. When you're ready, Personal Capital will assign an expert advisor to you to talk about how to make the most of your investments, both by helping to optimize your portfolio and reduce your fees. Take the first easy step. Go to personalcapital.com/WSJ to check if you're overpaying on your annual investment fees. Signing up takes just a minute. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to make better investment decisions on the web or on your smartphone or tablet. To set up your free account, go to personalcapital.com/WSJ. That's personalcapital.com/WSJ.
Wake up to the Wall Street Journal This Morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
Thanks for being with us. It is Thursday, July 31st. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. Some of our top stories. The House paves the way for a lawsuit against President Obama for executive overreach. Israel calls up another 16,000 reservists to battle Hamas. And on a lighter note, the secret weapon that tech companies use to soften their image. We'll have that report in about 20 minutes. What's next for the latest sanctions from the U.S. and Europe against Russia for its stance on the Ukraine crisis? The design is to get Russian President Vladimir Putin to quit his support for separatist rebels in Ukraine. But Wall Street Journal European economics editor Marcus Walker says recent history of the use of financial sanctions by Washington and Brussels suggests that significantly more pervasive penalties would be needed to change the Kremlin's calculations. He's with us live this morning from Berlin. Marcus, what kind of more pervasive penalties are experts talking about?
Well, there are financial sanctions against the Russian financial sector that are only partial at the moment, and they could be stepped up to make it harder for Russia's banking system and its corporate sector to finance itself, and that could cause that would kind of cut off the oxygen that the economy needs to grow. So that's one area where sanctions can and probably will be stepped up if the Kremlin's policy in Ukraine doesn't change. But the area that would really hurt Russia would be energy exports. The problem is that that would also hurt EU countries who depend on those energy exports, especially gas. And that includes many Central and Eastern European countries, who are some of those that the EU is trying to protect against Russian muscle flexing. And so a policy that punishes those Central and Eastern European countries is one that the EU will want to avoid. And that raises a big question. It means that the biggest piece of business between Russia and the West, which is really energy exports, probably won't be the focus of any tight sanctions. At least it's hard to foresee that happening unless the conflict really gets a lot worse.
Why don't these latest sanctions include Russia's largest bank?
Well, there's a difference between the U.S. situation and the EU situation. I think with Sberbank, it's not quite clear. It could well be that a different approach in both countries, a more targeted bank-by-bank approach in the U.S., but in the EU, legal requirements that you treat similar institutions similarly has led to a slightly different list of banks that's being targeted. But I think it's mainly technical or procedural reasons.
Okay.
In practice, the effect on banks may well be bigger than the specifics of sanctions because financial markets in the West may avoid doing business with a number of Russian banks in a number of ways that go beyond the quite narrow measures in the sanctions.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal's European economics editor, Marcus Walker. Where have supporters said that sanctions have worked elsewhere in the world, Marcus, as we compare these?
Well, one very recent example is Iran, where the U.S. and the EU believe that the very tight sanctions regime in the last couple of years was decisive in forcing Iran to negotiate seriously about its nuclear program. But it took many years to build up those sanctions, and they became very drastic and actually throttled Iran's banking sector almost entirely and also devastated its oil exports. So that was a very tough sanctions regime that took a long time to build. It's hard to foresee sanctions against Russia ever becoming as draconian as they have become against Iran, which raises the question, is the West willing and able to impose the kind of economic price on Russia that might actually change Russian policy in Ukraine?
Right. How problematic are loopholes when it comes to sanctions?
Well, I mean, sanctions always lead to an attempt to evade them, and that often leads to another round of measures that try to close loopholes. So there's a natural tendency here for sanctions to become progressively tightened over time if the underlying conflict isn't resolved. I mean, there are some obvious loopholes in the financial sanctions, for example. The Russian banks that are majority owned by the Russian government can't sell new shares or bonds in European or U.S. markets, but they are allowed to borrow money via syndicated loans, for example. So I think that the point of that, I think it's a deliberate loophole in order not to completely crash the Russian financial system, but to cause more of a slow squeeze rather than an abrupt strangulation.
Do we get a sense of how long the EU and the U.S. will wait before bringing more sanctions here?
That depends on events on the ground and on what happens in coming months. But I think the events are moving fairly fast. And given that the Ukrainian government forces seem to be making some progress in retaking territory from the rebels, this is quite a fluid situation. If the rebels come under military pressure, then Russia will be forced to choose either to let the rebellion dwindle or actually to step up its support for the rebels. And if it chooses the latter, then we could well see sanctions being tightened quite soon.
Yeah. Marcus, thanks for a few minutes. Much appreciated. Wall Street Journal's European economics editor, Marcus Walker, with us live this morning from Berlin. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. In New Jersey, by the way, home of Bruce Springsteen, it's actually illegal to talk while the music is playing. It's a bit of a violation I've committed right there.
Oh, you're in trouble then.
Mm-hmm. By the way, check out the new WSJ radio app. It brings all the latest episodes of this program and all of your favorite Wall Street Journal radio shows to your fingertips. You can download the WSJ radio app for iPhone and iPad at Apple's App Store. The MarketWatch Radio Network also has an excellent new free app available for iPhone and iPad, again, at the App Store. The Wall Street Journal this morning's Mike Gavin here with a look at some of the stories we're following.
Gordon, much is being made this morning of the House voting yesterday to give Speaker John Boehner the go-ahead to sue President Obama over the Affordable Care Act. We also have some newly released emails from former IRS official Lois Lerner that Republicans say shows a very big bias toward conservatives, including some very salty language. Gina will have more in America's First News coming up. Now, Gordon, with the World Cup fading into memory, it's time now for companies to assess what effect, if any, the month-long tournament had on their bottom line. And while many companies saw a boost, according to the Wall Street Journal, not all business was booming. Las Vegas Sands said that games hurt gambling revenue, with the VIP segment falling 20% in June from just a month earlier. As fans gather around TVs and radios, many of them hot off store shelves, commerce in many parts of the world slowed and sometimes stood still. Whirlpool said demand for appliances in Latin America could fall as much as 3% this year because people bought items such as video recorders instead of washing machines. That's look, everything's got an effect on everything. Black & Decker says it sold fewer power drills and buzz saws in the region because the World Cup became a huge market distraction. Meanwhile, fewer Americans were eating Grand Slam meals at Denny's restaurants during key games. And American Airlines said fewer business travelers bothered to track to Latin America.
Guess what? Those things can be anticipated every 4 years.
Right.
Heads up, companies. The next World Cup is in Russia in 2018. You can expect similar trends then.
Basically, the crux of the article in the journal today said, when in doubt, blame the World Cup.
There you go.
That's what a lot of these businesses are doing.
It's funny about the Las Vegas Sands saying the
gambling
World Cup
revenue.
Hurt gambling revenue.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is like sports like football, you know, the Super Bowl, the World Series, NASCAR, horse racing. Those are sports. Soccer is life. You don't bet on life like that.
Well said.
I think that's what soccer aficionados would argue. 15 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Is there a voice in your head saying, you can do better with your finances? Well, know that you can do better. Save more for retirement and reduce costly broker and mutual fund fees with a free, easy, and secure tool called Personal Capital. In one place, Personal Capital aggregates all of your accounts, like your 401k and IRA, shows how much you're overpaying in fees, and how to reduce those fees. You also get tailored advice on optimizing your investments. That's the personal in Personal Capital. When you're ready, Personal Capital will assign an expert advisor to you to talk about how to make the most of your investments, both by helping to optimize your portfolio and reduce your fees. Take the first easy step. Go to personalcapital.com/WSJ. to check if you're overpaying on your annual investment fees. Signing up takes just a minute. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to make better investment decisions on the web or on your smartphone or tablet. To set up your free account, go to personalcapital.com/WSJ. That's personalcapital.com/WSJ.
You're listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
Good Thursday Eve. Welcome aboard. How much Diet Coke have you been buying lately? It's a tough time right now for parent company Coca-Cola. The soft drink maker has had 3 years of sluggish global growth. So Coke is pulling out all the stops by refocusing on the U.S. To Atlanta now, headquarters of Coca-Cola, and Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Esterl. Mike, what's going on with Coke?
Well, I mean, Coke's being the most famous drink brand for many decades now, more than a century, and they have been able to grow for most of that period. The last couple of years, it's gotten more and more complicated for them. In the U.S., Americans, on a per capita basis, have been drinking less soda now since the late 1990s every single year. And Coke continued to grow because it sells a lot of its soda and other drinks outside the U.S. Now, that growth is starting to slow. Places like Mexico, which is a huge market for Coke, introduced a tax on sugary drinks in January. That's really hit them there. Places like China, very sort of uneven. Most consumers there still prefer to drink things like tea and juices. And so now suddenly, the numbers aren't adding up. The company is still growing, but barely, and certainly not as quickly as investors would like to see.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Esterl in Atlanta about how Coke is trying to manage a slide in soda sales. So what's Coke doing in order to get us interested again?
what they're doing is they are spending more money on marketing. They pulled back for a while when commodity costs went through the roof in recent years. And so one of their strategies is we're just going to spend more on marketing again, and we're going to make sure this the Coca-Cola and the other sodas come back. They've got a campaign right now in the U.S. called Share a Coke. And if you've gone to a store and you looked at the 20-ounce bottles, rather than Coca-Cola on the bottle, it says about 250 different names, the 250 most popular names of teenagers and millennials in the U.S. right now. And the idea is if you go to a store, you see your name on it, you might buy it if you wouldn't otherwise. And you might see your friend's name on it, and you might buy a Coke for your friend. And so that's creating a fair bit of buzz. It's actually helped their sales in the last few weeks. Question is, you know, how many times can they do that?
Thanks, Mike. Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Esterl in Atlanta. 9 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is back. She has America's first news.
Good morning. Israel's military is calling up another 16,000 reservists as it hits Islamic militants in Gaza. Another day of fighting killed a reported 116 Palestinians and three Israeli soldiers, and came as diplomatic efforts to end the war stalled. In San Diego, authorities said that an 80-year-old woman was killed when the small plane in which she was riding crashed into a shopping center parking lot. The pilot was injured in the crash near a Costco and a Target, which had its roof clipped by the plane. A half dozen people cleaning up UCLA's flooded Pauley Pavilion were treated for carbon monoxide exposure. You may remember that arena was covered with up to 8 inches of water that gushed from a broken underground main. Stock futures this morning looked negative following a mixed close for Wall Street yesterday. The Dow was down about 32. The S&P added less than 1. The Nasdaq gained about 20. The initial assessment of second quarter GDP came in at 4%. That was better than expected, but did little to boost the market.
I think that had been discounted to some extent. Expectations were that you would see a pretty good snapback, and we got that.
Chuck Carlson with Horizon Investment Services. Two airline groups are suing the TSA over new security fees that went into effect last week. The carriers had been pushing for a delay and allege that the agency is violating federal law. The changes raised fees on many round-trip tickets to around $11. Boeing plans to build a new version of its flagship 787 exclusively at its non-union factory in South Carolina. The longer version of the Dreamliner will be the first Boeing jet model built solely at a non-union facility. Well, a lot of us have been frustrated with our cable company, certainly, but this is not the way to go. The Albuquerque Journal says a New Mexico woman is accused of pulling a gun on a Comcast worker after being told about some unexpected fees. She is now facing some different kinds of charges.
Yeah, I would imagine. Okay, that would be a little uncomfortable, I guess. Not the way to go. A good, firm tongue-lashing by telephone, maybe, but not weapons.
Or a very strong letter.
Okay,
that very too. Strong letter to the company to say, look, I didn't know about these fees. Mm-hmm. I thought this was free.
Right. I don't read the fine print. You can't expect me to read the fine print.
A lot of us don't read the fine print, unfortunately,
that
right,
is
Gordon?
True. And me included. 6 minutes in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for spending time with us. Time now for a technology update, and it's brought to you by T-Mobile. Unleash the potential of your business with T-Mobile, the company that's changing the way business does wireless. A fluffy puppy is hard to ignore. That's the approach that some tech companies are taking to get you to stop thinking of them as a bunch of data crunchers. Tech companies could use people to represent human traits like Betty Crocker, but branding experts say animals are better at magnifying specific traits like knowledge, speed, and loyalty. Xiaomi, which is a Chinese phone company, uses a mascot called Mi Bunny. It's one of the most iconic corporate dolls of China. The online travel company Hipmunk uses a chipmunk as its mascot. Wears a blue scarf and aviator goggles. The CEO of the company sometimes wears a hipmunk costume to company events. Animal identities can provide cultural significance in Asia. The Chinese zodiac, for example, helps popularize animals such as tigers, dragons, and sheep. But not all animals offer the same message. A tortoise in parts of Asia may signify long life, but in the U.S., it just means slow. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning. Quick, convenient, and most importantly, easy to use. That's how you can describe Stamps.com. It will make your mailing and shipping a breeze. With Stamps.com, buy and print official U.S. postage using your computer and printer. There's nothing to learn. Stamps.com will give you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage for any letter, any package. They'll even help you choose the best class of mail to get your mail there on time for the least amount of money. Then drop your mail into any mailbox or hand it to your mailman, and you're done. Mailing and shipping has never been easier, and you'll never have to go to the post office again. Right now, use the promo code WSJ for this special offer, a no-risk trial, plus a $110 bonus offer that includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in WSJ. That's Stamps.com. Enter WSJ. Thanks for listening to The Wall Street Journal This Morning. For more, follow The Wall Street Journal This Morning on Facebook and Twitter, and now on TuneIn.